Well, the night was too short, my friend, Clark said, extending a hand to Solomon. What are you guys doing tomorrow? He asked, just as his hand gripped Clark's.
Oh.
Clark had a surprised look on his face. Sorry, Solomon said. I mean, thanks for coming. I'm free tomorrow, Lisa said, looking Clark's way with wide eyes.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's Saturday, though, so I'm sleeping like half the day, but that's it.
Perfect, Lisa said. I'll call when we're on our way. After they were gone, Solomon walked to his room and fell back onto the bed, letting his feet dangle off one side. It was pitch black, except for a faint red glow from his alarm clock. It was so quiet suddenly, like it had always been. And even though he was a little relieved to finally be alone, he replayed the entire night in his head. He'd made it through without any problems. But instead of celebrating it, Solomon felt his heart racing and his breathing picking up and his hands shaking. He turned and grabbed a pillow, pressing his face into it and trying to take deep breaths. And there in the darkness, he wrote it out as he heard his parents getting home. When the door slowly opened a few minutes later, he pretended to be asleep, his face still covered. The next afternoon, Lisa and Clark came over around 3, and as soon as Solomon answered the door, they each held out gifts for him. I thought I wasn't in prison, he said, blushing but trying to move past it. Well, these are really for all of us, Lisa said, holding up a plate covered in pink plastic wrap. It's a secret recipe. Best brownies you'll ever taste.
It's the truth, Clark said, and I brought some DVDs that are probably scratched up.
Awesome, on all accounts. Come on in.
Dude, are your parents ever home? Clark asked, looking around.
All the time, he answered. They should be pulling up any minute, actually. It didn't take long before Solomon challenged them to a rematch at Munchkin. It was already set up and everything.
He'd been such a nervous wreck all day waiting for them, pacing around the house and watching the clock, that he started planning out everything they'd do that afternoon. Games were first, of course, but then he thought maybe they'd watch a movie or something. Sure, that was something he could do alone, but ever since Lisa showed up, he'd come to appreciate seeing how she reacted to things. What made her laugh or cringe or get sad? After a movie, he was hoping they'd stay late enough to watch Saturday Night Live with him. His parents had given up on the show years before, but it was a weekly tradition that Solomon refused to let go of, and he was determined to share it with someone. After their game, they all went to the kitchen to eat some leftover pizza from the night before. Solomon hoisted himself up onto the counter and Clark followed. Lisa sat on a swiveling bar stool and spun around slowly as they all talked and ate. And for whatever reason, Clark decided to bring up dating, a topic Solomon wasn't too sure he was ready for.
Okay. But like, don't you want to go on dates and stuff? Clark asked.
Lisa suddenly stopped spinning and looked Solomon right in the eyes. I don't know, he answered, caught a little off guard.
You don't know? Clark asked. Look, there are lots of dudes out there, Sol. Lots of dudes.
Yeah, but I'm here. They're there. It's just how it is. Clark, leave it alone, Lisa said.
All right, sorry. Just, you're a catch, man. Handsome, funny, you've got all 7 seasons of STTNG on DVD.
That made Solomon laugh, and the red went out of his cheeks soon enough. This guy didn't care if he was gay or straight or agoraphobic or anything. He was perfect. And he was probably the closest Solomon was ever going to get to a boyfriend. Which, despite sounding heartbreaking,
actually felt like a real win for a kid who'd only been slightly out of the closet for a month. A few minutes later, Solomon's parents got home and walked in on the three of them joking around and eating in the kitchen.
Troublemakers, Solomon's dad said.
Mom, Dad, this is Clark. Clark hopped down from the counter and walked over to shake their hands.
Jason Reed, nice to meet you, Solomon's dad said.
This is Valerie.
Hi, so nice to meet you, Clark said.
You have beautiful teeth, Valerie said. Do you floss?
Every day,
he answered.
And I've never had a cavity.
Good to hear, she said.
Lisa, he's a keeper.
I see you guys are getting a pool, Clark said. What's that, a standard 8-footer?
You looking to buy one yourself, Clark?
Jason asked with a grin.
I wish, he answered. I've been begging my mom for one since I was 5.
Come use ours anytime, Valerie said.
Awesome.
Yeah, even if you don't like Solomon, Jason joked.
Wow, nice, Dad. You guys want to go watch a movie or something?
Sure, Lisa said.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Clark said. I brought Community so you could see the Dreamatorium.
Awesome, Solomon said.
Okay, you guys have fun with whatever all that means, Valerie said.
I've got a Pat Conroy book that isn't going to read itself.
And I've got a lawn to mow, Jason said,
walking away in the opposite direction of his wife.
Dude, they're awesome.
Yeah, I like them okay, Solomon said.
No, really.
My mom's a basket case, man.
You've got it good.
He's right, Lisa said. You may suck at cards, but you definitely win the parent game.
It's too bad I've driven them so crazy, he said. They used to have fun.
Used to go on trips and stuff. Last night was the longest they've been out in a while, aside from work.
They afraid to leave you alone? Clark asked.
You seem pretty self-sufficient to me.
It's not that, he said. It makes them feel guilty or something. I don't know. It's like they're holding out until I'm better.
They don't make you see a shrink?
Used to, Solomon said. Came here once a week.
When did that stop? Lisa asked.
A little after the first year. She kept putting me on medicine that made me sick. I begged and begged, and they finally told her to stop coming.
I saw a therapist when I was younger, Clark said. I was scared to sleep in my room alone.
That's normal, though, Lisa said.
Not when you're 12, he added.
I asked my dad if I could try marijuana once, Solomon blurted out.
Seriously?
Dude, we go to high school in California. We can get you weed.
Noted, Solomon said.
So that's why they call it high school?
Boo, Lisa said.
Try again.
Okay, okay.
Upland? More like Highland.
Clark laughed, but Lisa just shook her head and tried not to smile. Solomon loved how she always pretended like her sense of humor was above theirs, when it was so clear to him that she loved every second of their stupid banter. At around 2 a.m, after more games, an especially lame episode of SNL, and way too many bad jokes, Lisa finally stood up and said it was time to go. Clark seemed as bummed as Solomon, but they all had that middle-of-the-night sleepy look in their eyes. Solomon walked them to the door and they said their goodnights. He wanted to ask when he'd see them next, but he got shy about it at the last minute and didn't say anything. He couldn't just invite them over every day and expect them to never say no. Lisa hugged him around the neck before she stepped outside, and as he went to give Clark a handshake, he was met with a big squeeze around the shoulders. He didn't know what to do or whether or not he should hug him back, so he just stood there with his arms limp and let it happen. Then Clark pulled away and had this huge smile on his face. "You're all right, man," he said. Solomon watched them from the door as they walked down the driveway and got into Lisa's car. He waited as the engine turned on and the headlights lit up, giving them a wave as they backed out and drove off, his hands staying up in the air until they were out of sight. It hadn't happened before, really, so he tried to think about something else to keep from freaking out. But it wouldn't go away. He felt it. It was small and it was complicated, but he felt it all the same. He wanted to follow them. He wanted to walk outside and follow them into the world.
Chapter 16. Lisa Prater. It had been a very important weekend so far, and despite being dangerously sleepy, Lisa drove Clark home with a rush of energy and excitement pumping through her veins. She knew he was on board now, especially after seeing the way he'd hit it off with Solomon. Lisa was overwhelmed with the feeling that she'd done something great by introducing the two of them. Now they'd have each other to talk holodecks and spaceships, and she'd have her ticket out of Upland. Everybody would win. "Thank you," she said to Clark when they got to his dad's.
"For what?"
"For this weekend. For not being too pissed at me to meet him."
"I'm still a little pissed,"
he said, smiling.
"But I had fun. It's so easy with him. Like I've known him forever. I think maybe I've been needing a Solomon Reed in my life."
"Is that right?"
"He's way better than my other options."
"I've met them, yes," she said. "TJ was asking about you at school yesterday. He made some stupid joke about you being a ghost."
"Good," he said. "I don't have anything to say to those guys anymore."
"Why's that?"
"Because they're jerks. Seriously, if they aren't making fun of someone, then they're talking about whose girlfriend they want to bang."
"Gross."
"Yeah, it is. And look, I laugh sometimes, but then I feel like shit all day afterward. I'm not like them, and I don't want to be."
"I don't want you to be either," she said.
"Well, while you've been hanging out with the coolest crazy person in history, I've been pretty much sitting around the house doing nothing. I know this is a big deal to you, but you can't just disappear. What if I don't get into a school near you, huh? You want to spend our last year together hanging out with someone else?"
"Look, I'm sorry, but now you can come with me. See? It works this way."
"So it's share you or be alone?"
he asked, complete amazement in his eyes. "No, that's not what I meant. Just forgive me, okay? I'll do better. I will."
"Fine. You know Janice is pissed at you too, right?"
"I have several unanswered texts that would indicate so."
"You should go see her," Clark suggested. "I know she's ridiculous, but you've been friends your whole lives."
"I haven't even told her about Saul. Like, not a thing."
"Well, there's only one way to fix that. I'm sure she'll understand."
"She'll want a boon," she said. "Justice is very important to her."
"Me too," he said, leaning over and kissing her forehead. "I'll see you tomorrow, Dr. Prater."
The next day, Lisa woke up to a fight in the kitchen between her mother and Ron. This one was a doozy. Slamming cabinets, yelling, a threat or two. She stayed in her room until it was over. But even then, she took her time going down the stairs, hoping to go undetected. "Lisa?" "Damn," she said to herself, rounding the corner into the kitchen. "Yeah?" Her mom was sitting at the table in a silk robe and house slippers, stirring a cup of coffee. This wasn't going to be pleasant, Lisa knew, but she had to do it. She couldn't just leave her mom alone like this, not after the fight she'd just heard. "Are you okay?" she asked, sitting down across from her. "Been better." "I don't really know what to say, Mom." "I know, sweetie. Me neither." "Did he leave?" Lisa asked, reaching for her mom's cup of coffee and taking a sip. "Yep." She started crying, holding her chin to her chest, but not moving a muscle. just quiet little whimpers that made Lisa so angry. Why did she do this to herself? Why keep marrying the same man over and over again? Lisa didn't know how she could still be so surprised. Ron was a carbon copy of the one before him, and Lisa was pretty sure they were both just less charming versions of her dad. Sometimes she wondered if maybe she was crying over him, after all these years, if every new guy was just a poor replacement for the first one who left her. Lisa reached a hand over and placed it on top of her mom's. She held it there, her thumb gripping her mother's fingers tightly, and then let go. "Let me tell you about Solomon," she said, standing up to pour herself some coffee. "Who?" Lisa explained the whole situation to her mother, trying to distract her the only way she knew how, with something that closely resembled gossip. Her mom had wondered why she'd insisted on switching dentists, so this cleared some things up. Lisa, of course, left out the part about the scholarship essay. She couldn't risk being talked out of it, not after everything had been falling into place so well. And now, with Clark on her team, she felt like getting Solomon out of that house was inevitable. "Wait, wait," her mom interrupted. "You and Clark are hanging out with this kid?" "Yes. He needs us, believe me." "What kind of parents let their child act that way? Never leaving the house? Not going to school? Sounds like he needs a beating to me." "Wow, Mom. No one wants to go to school, Lisa. Most kids would stay home all day if you let them. That's why you don't let them." "I told you, he has a legitimate mental illness, Mom. Be more sensitive, please." "They say that about alcoholics, too. They have a disease." "Yeah, right. The rest of us are supposed to feel sorry for all the drunks? Give me a break." "You should write for Psychology Today or something. Very inspiring stuff." "Sorry." "Well, good for you. And Clark. Just don't get into any trouble." "Trouble? I don't even think that's possible with Solomon." "I didn't think it was possible with three different husbands, but look where I am now."
"With an intelligent, beautiful daughter and a stable job?"
"Funny," she said. "You know what I mean."
"Mom," Lisa began, wanting so badly to just be honest, to tell her she had to stop looking for her happiness with these deadbeats, but she couldn't do it.
"I love you." "I love you, sweetie. Want me to make you some lunch?"
"No, thanks. I've got to go talk to Janice. I've been neglecting her for weeks, and I'm pretty sure she's pissed at me."
Janice Plutko worked in the Montclair Plaza Mall at a kiosk that sold perfume and fossil watches. Before Solomon, Lisa would stop by several times a week, and they'd eat cookies from the Great American Cookie Company in the food court and watch YouTube videos on their phones. On the rare occasion that Janice had a customer, Lisa would inundate them with free samples and usually end up talking them into at least buying something from the clearance rack. Janice always had her best sales days when Lisa showed up.
"Hey, you," Lisa said when she walked up to the kiosk.
Janice turned her way and gave a sort of half smile.
"Look, I know you're pissed. Just let me take you to lunch so we can talk it out."
"What's to talk out?" she asked. "Some people just grow apart."
"Oh my God, really? Lisa, I've barely seen you for a month. Do not treat me like I'm being irrational."
"Sorry, just come to lunch with me. Can you take a break?"
She grabbed her keys off the counter by the register.
"I've only got 15 minutes.
They sat in the fairly crowded food court and shared some fries and a milkshake. Lisa couldn't get much out of Janice, but she tried her best. They'd been fighting on and off about stupid things since the fifth grade, but she seemed really upset about this one, and Lisa knew she'd have to come clean about Solomon to be forgiven.
"Can you keep a secret?"
"Maybe," she whispered, leaning forward over the table.
"I've been working on a project. For college."
"What kind of project? Your cousin? Did you talk to him?"
"No. Do you remember the fountain kid?"
"Of course."
"I found him. He hasn't left the house in 3 years. I've been hanging out with him for weeks. He's going to get me that scholarship, Janice."
"Are you being serious right now?" She was still whispering, but it was getting louder with every word.
You found him? Are you insane?
No, Lisa said calmly. I'm going to save his life. Janice leaned back in her seat and shook her head for a few seconds with her eyes fixed on Lisa. Anyway, I'm really sorry I've been so flaky lately, but I've made a lot of progress with Solomon. I think I could really be onto something here. With the right combination of game therapy and long-term social exposure, I could have him ready to face the world again by this fall. Lisa, you're pretending to be this boy's friend so you can write about it and get a scholarship. I'd hardly call him a boy. He's just a year younger than we are. Do you not understand why this is wrong? Because you're the smartest person I know, and if you can't see this, then I need to reevaluate a lot of things in my life. I get it, Lisa said. But just like I told Clark, it's a means to an end. It's effective. If something works, if it cures him, then why does it matter how it works? He will never know, and he'll be better. At this point, finding out is the only thing that could hurt him. And I guess you made it that way on purpose. God, you act like I'm a con artist. I want to help him. I've wanted to for a long time. You remember? Now I get to help him and go somewhere to learn how to help more people. What's wrong with that, Janice? Let me meet him. No way, Lisa said. Why not? He's not ready. He's still getting used to me. And he just met Clark. I can't overwhelm him. He's hanging out with Clark, too? Geez, Lisa, what kind of therapy is this? Like I said, it's experimental. He just needs to learn that he doesn't have anything to be afraid of out here. Maybe he should be afraid. Did you consider that? No, Lisa said, staring at her blankly. So I'm supposed to just forgive you for completely vanishing on me because it was all to help some crazy kid? He isn't crazy, she snapped. He just has a bad relationship with the world. He hasn't left his house in 3 years. That sounds crazy to me. He has acute agoraphobia brought on by severe panic disorder. When he leaves his house, his panic gets worse. Any one of us would do whatever we could to feel safe, just like he's doing. It's survival. But that's no way to live, and no matter what he says, I know he'll be happy out here. And we deserve him. Fine, whatever. I forgive you, okay? But I don't approve. You don't have to. Just don't tell anyone. It could ruin everything. Fine. But I need a favor. Shit, Lisa said. Don't say it. Camp Elizabeth. They need one more junior counselor, and I know you had fun last summer no matter how much you try to pretend you didn't. Oh, God, I can't, Janice. I purposefully kept my whole summer free to try and help Solomon, and I... Lisa, she said, crossing her arms, you owe me. Come with me to camp, and I'll forget you abandoned me like a dog. Okay, chill out a little. A dog, Lisa. A diseased dog. Left to fend for myself in the wilds of Upland High School. It's only 2 weeks. Starts June 15th. Say yes. Fine, I'll make it work, but I'm not teaching canoe. They need you to help teach canoe. Damn it. Later that day, after Lisa had finished all her homework, she called Clark to see if she could come over. She figured a whole weekend hanging out with a stranger had earned him a little one-on-one time. Plus, she couldn't remember the last time they'd even made out.
We should go see Saul, he said.
Again?
Yeah, why not? I'm pretty sure he's not busy.
I'm totally down, she said. Unless you'd rather, do something else, if you know what I'm saying.
Nah, I think we should see Saul. Maybe later?
A little thrown off, but happy to continue with Solomon's treatment, Lisa called to see if he was game for visitors, and, judging from his tone, he'd probably been waiting by the phone all day. She couldn't imagine what it had been like for him to go so long without anyone but his parents or his grandma to talk to, and even though she felt like she'd made a lot of progress over the last month, it seemed like Clark had brought out something new in him, something less self-conscious and more confident. Maybe he was trying to impress him, or maybe Solomon just thought he and Clark lived in the same world, with the rest of us drifting in and out and never really understanding things like the intricacies of Klingon human relations or what the hell a Khaleesi is. When they got to Solomon's house, the Angels game was on, and the whole family was watching it in the living room. They all watched the last three innings together, and Solomon's mom would occasionally shout at the TV, which made Clark laugh every single time.
"She's very passionate about sports," Solomon said.
"And Saul's very passionate about making fun of his mom," Valerie added. "We almost had another kid in the hopes that we'd get a sports fan."
"You can adopt me," Clark said. "My mom hates sports, and my dad didn't even teach me to throw a football." That's just sad, son," Solomon's dad said, looking at Clark and shaking his head.
"Don't fall for that," Lisa said. "He's got like 20 older brothers, but they all moved away."
"It's really 3, but it may as well be 20," Clark added.
"Holy crap," Solomon said. "That's a lot of dudes."
"Are they all in college?" Solomon's mom asked.
2 of them are," Clark answered. "And one's a tattoo artist in Hollywood."
"I always wanted a tattoo," Solomon said. "Oh yeah? What would you get?" Lisa asked.
"The Starship Enterprise."
"Yes,"
Clark said. "I bet my brother could come to you."
"Nope," Solomon's dad said.
"Not till you're 18.
"What's it matter?" Solomon asked.
Jason just looked at him, and without a word of protest, Solomon dropped it and moved on. Lisa was simultaneously appalled and in awe of his restraint. Or maybe some families just don't fight. She'd probably never know, but she couldn't imagine these people ever raising their voices over anything more than a foul ball. That Sunday night was the first of many nights like it. Lisa and Clark quickly became fixtures in the Reed home, showing up after school and staying for hours, sometimes into the early morning, even on school nights. With each new visit, Clark and Solomon would discover some shared interest, whether it was a B-movie Lisa had never heard of or some fan site she wouldn't be caught dead on. There always seemed to be something bringing the two of them closer together, and even though she wished it could just be her and Clark sometimes, she knew the sacrifice was worth it. Plus, all that time as the third wheel had allowed her to very closely observe Solomon, probably much closer than she could have without Clark. She became a master at reading his mood, and she was always ready to step in and help in case the anxiety kicked in. His tells were subtle, but by that point, she knew them well. If something or someone was too loud or noisy, his left eye would twitch a little. This would also happen if he felt particularly unnerved or worked up about something he'd said or done. It was like he was reacting to actual physical pain sometimes. But most of the time, that's all it was. Just a little twitch in one eye and then it was over. She only worried when he left the room. No one needed to use the bathroom that often, and Lisa was betting every time that this was his way of catching his breath or grounding himself enough to avoid letting the anxiety take over. It would have been easy to forget sometimes that he was like that. Clark seemed to put it out of his mind completely, which was good, Lisa thought. He treated Solomon just the way she'd hoped, like he was normal. And maybe that was part of getting him better. Maybe if someone like Clark could ignore Solomon's problems, then other people out there could too. But then, of course, Solomon had a full-blown meltdown in front of Clark. It was as surprising as it was quick. The three of them were sitting around the computer when he suddenly put his head down on the desk and started tapping his fingers quickly on the keyboard. Clark looked over at Lisa and shrugged, backing away and eyeing her like she should know what the hell they were supposed to do. She did. This would only be her second time witnessing one, but she sprung into action without hesitation. She took a deep breath, bent down so her face was right next to Solomon's, and she started to talk in the calmest tone possible. "Saul, can you take some deep breaths with me?"
"Yes,"
he said. It sounded like he was crying, but she wasn't sure. "Okay, I'm going to count to 10. Inhale slowly till 5, then exhale slowly." So she counted, and he breathed. Then she counted again. And Clark, not knowing what to say or do, took his phone out and stared at it, pretending that something was on the screen.
"Can you guys give me a minute?"
Solomon asked, sitting back up but with his eyes closed. She stood up and grabbed Clark's hand, leading him out into the hallway. With the door shut behind her, she put her arms around Clark's torso and squeezed tightly.
"Is he okay?"
he whispered. "I think so. Embarrassed, maybe."
"What should I say?"
"Just pretend it didn't happen unless he brings it up." When Solomon opened the door, he looked a little better. Lisa could tell he'd wiped away a few tears, but he didn't look especially sad or ashamed or anything. Maybe a bit tired, but with as little sunlight as he got, he always kind of looked that way. He told them to come back in and then sat down at his desk again.
"Sorry," he said in a defeated tone. "For what?"
Clark asked.
"You don't have to do that," he said. "It actually helps me to not ignore it. It's weird."
"Are you okay?" Lisa asked.
"I'm fine. It was a fast one." "How often does it happen?"
Clark asked.
"Depends. That was the first one in a couple weeks."
"Damn," Clark said.
"It's okay, though," Solomon added. "I can handle that. Before, it was every day. Every day. At school, on the bus, in fountains from time to time."
"I never asked you," Lisa said. "Why the fountain?"
"It's the water," he said. "Calms me down."
"Is that why you want a pool?"
Clark asked.
"That's some of it, I guess. I also just miss it. I miss going out there."
"I would too,"
Clark said.
"So you've got two good reasons to make it work."
"What if I can't, though?" he asked.
"What if they go to all this trouble and have their hopes built up, and I can't take one step out there?"
"They'll be disappointed," Lisa said. "But they'll understand. Do you think they're betting on this being a sure thing?"
"Probably not."
"Then wait and see what happens before you accept defeat," Clark said. "Either way, you'll be okay. And when the time comes, if you need us to help you, we will."
"You just want to swim in my pool," Solomon said with a big smile.
"You bet I do, whether you're out there or not, buddy," Clark said. "I was thinking of volunteering to be the pool boy, build myself a little shack in the backyard, maybe."
"Saul, if you don't want Clark in your house anymore, just say the word."
"He can stay. Look, until I can't go out there, let's just hold out hope, okay?"
"There you go,"
Clark said, leaning forward to give him a high five.
"Just wait, man. We're gonna have sunburns all summer."
"Not me," Lisa said. "Melanoma is real, and you're never too young to be vulnerable."
"She's chief of the sunscreen police, by the way."
"I didn't choose to be this person," Lisa defended. "It chose me."
"Good," Solomon added, standing up. "I knew the second I met you that you'd save my life someday."
Part 2. Summer. 1 month later.
Chapter 17. Solomon Reed. Summer didn't mean much to Solomon. He still did the same amount of schoolwork, a plan he discovered would save him an entire year of high school. If he worked all through each summer, he'd have the credits to get his diploma just after he turned 17. But since meeting Clark and Lisa, he'd started slacking off a bit. It was an easy thing, being distracted by the two of them. And they made it easier by showing up nearly every day. It wasn't always both of them, either. Lisa, being in student council and on the yearbook staff, was suddenly swamped at the end of the school year. So Clark started coming over without her. At first, Lisa made a big deal out of it, calling Solomon one afternoon, using that calm voice of hers, and explaining how busy she'd be over the following weeks. Eventually, Solomon just had to cut her off. "Of course Clark can come over without you." "I know, but I had to make sure. What if you secretly hate him, or you've just been hanging out with him for me or something?" "Is that the impression you get?" "Yesterday you guys spent 2 hours writing a theme song for a board game. I think you're probably the best friend he's ever had." "It's a great song." It seemed a little strange at first, but things weren't too different with Lisa gone. Solomon noticed, though, that every time she did have a chance to come over, she seemed distracted. always sitting quietly and watching as he and Clark talked about all the things she thought were stupid. Sometimes Solomon wondered if she was filming a Teenage Boys in Their Natural Habitats documentary in her head. It was good that they'd gotten used to her absence, because as soon as school was out for the summer, Lisa had to go to Camp Elizabeth. It sounded like Solomon's own personal hell, complete with knot-tying classes and wilderness survival training. And the few times Lisa talked about it, she hadn't seemed all that thrilled either. Apparently, she'd been guilted into it by her friend Janice, who Solomon was forbidden to meet. She'll try to pour holy water on you.
Never mind.
Clark worked summers as a lifeguard at the Upland Community Center pool. He hated it because his shift was from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. 5 days a week. Sometimes, when he'd come over to Solomon's after work, he'd fall asleep on the couch. There were even a few afternoons when he'd be right in the middle of a sentence and doze off completely. So Solomon would just read a book or watch TV until he woke up.
"I want to quit so bad," Clark said one day. "I feel like a zombie."
"So just hang out here. All the food and Netflix you can stand, and a swimming pool on the way."
"Mom won't let me," he said.
"Well, if you don't spend money, you don't need it, right?"
"Yeah. It's not just that, though. She wants me to learn responsibility or something, and it's good for college applications."
"Lisa's worried you won't go."
"To college?" Clark asked.
"I may not.
I don't know yet."
"What else would you do?"
"That is also something I don't know yet."
"So, what's something you're good at, aside from speaking made-up languages?"
"Swimming," he said. "But I'm not good enough to make a career out of it."
"That sucks. Are you sure?"
"It would be a very short career."
"And then what?"
"Maybe you can get paid to play video games or something. Don't they need people for that?"
"Oh, no," he said. "I don't want my favorite thing to be my job. That would be a nightmare. No, thank you."
"But you'd get paid to do what you love," Solomon argued.
"And what if that makes me stop loving it?
I can't take the risk, man."
"My dad loves building things, and he loves movies, so he builds movie sets. That's badass, right?"
"He does seem happy," Clark said.
"But like, what are the chances someone would just hire me to play games all day? I wish that were realistic, but I'm sure it's a tough job to land."
"I wonder if I'll ever have a job," Solomon said.
"You could work online, I guess."
"If I never get better, you mean?"
"Oh, no.
Hey, I've accepted it. Maybe it sounds crazy to you, but that backyard may be the farthest I ever go."
"Do you ever think about being out there again? Like, all the way out there?"
"I didn't used to," he said. "Not much, anyway. Just the thought of it would give me a panic attack."
"And now?"
"It's still terrifying, but I can at least talk about it without crying, so that's a win."
"Well, maybe you could just picture being with us, huh? Like, if we're out there with you, then it won't be so scary."
Solomon had good days and he had bad days. But the good had far outnumbered the bad since Lisa and Clark had started coming around. Sometimes, though, they'd show up and he'd look completely exhausted, drained of all his charm and moving in slow motion. They could do that to him, the attacks.
Something about the physical response to panic can drain all the energy out of a person, and it doesn't matter what causes it or how long it lasts. What Solomon had was unforgiving and sneaky, and as smart as any other illness. It was like a virus or cancer that would hide just long enough to fool him into thinking it was gone. And because it showed up when it damn well pleased, he'd learned to be honest about it, knowing that embarrassment only made it worse. "Clark," he'd say, "feeling loopy." It was the best way to describe it. Loopy. Anxiety works a little differently for everyone, but it certainly always comes with cycling thoughts. Looping images that you can't control or stop, not easily anyway. Sometimes Solomon would start thinking about one of his parents dying, and then it would turn into both of them dying, and before he knew it, thoughts of something tragic happening to them, a car wreck, a random shooting, an earthquake, would swirl around in his mind so fast and so heavy that the only thing he could do was clench his fists and try to breathe as slowly as possible, to not let it get to him, to not lose control the way he had so many times before. Clark's way of dealing with it was to become a master at distraction therapy, which didn't work every time, but was always appreciated. When Solomon seemed particularly anxious, he'd try his best to keep his friend busy, and over time, it seemed to be working.
"We need a project," Clark suggested, the day Lisa left for camp.
"You're right. I can't play one more card game or I'll freak out."
"You know anything about cars?"
"What do you think?"
"I think that was a dumb question," he said.
"Does your dad?"
"I don't know. Probably.
Yours doesn't?"
"I've been asking him to help me fix up that van for 6 months, and he still hasn't done it. So I give up."
"What's wrong with it?"
"Well, it's a total piece of shit. I paid $300 for it last November, and honestly, I can't believe it hasn't blown up yet. I'm too scared to take it on the freeway because sometimes when I go over 50, it starts smoking."
"That can't be good."
"I need to clean it out, too. It smells like wet socks, and I think there's something dead in the back, but I'm too afraid to look. Lisa won't even ride in it anymore."
Solomon walked over to the kitchen window to look at Clark's van in the driveway. It was painted dark green, not professionally, and just on the side facing him. It had two hubcaps that didn't match, and what looked like a mostly flat tire.
"Can you back it into the garage?"
"You mean the holodeck?" Clark asked, sounding offended.
"It won't hurt anything," Solomon said. "I can't help you fix it, but I can help you clean it out. And then maybe my dad can have a look at the engine when he gets home."
A few minutes later, with just the one single dingy light bulb casting its faint glow all over the garage, Clark climbed into the back of the van. It was disgusting, to say the least, so Solomon stood just outside of it, holding open a large black garbage bag with his face turned away.
"You okay?"
Clark asked, amused. "Just make it quick and don't throw any dead body parts at me."
"What about live body parts?"
Half an hour in, Solomon was tying up the first trash bag and walking into the house to get a second. He ran into his dad in the kitchen and nearly jumped out of his skin.
"Holy shit!" he yelled.
"Watch your mouth," his dad said. "Who are you, your mother?"
"What are you up to anyway?"
"We're cleaning out Clark's van."
"Clark's here."
"He's in the garage." His dad followed him back and helped hold the trash bag while Clark tossed in soda cans, crumpled fast food bags, and weird random things, like a ripped pair of blue jean shorts and a deflated basketball.
"Are you Teen Wolf, Clark?" Solomon's dad asked.
"Only on the weekends."
They eventually took a break to have dinner, something Clark stayed for most nights of the week now. Valerie loved it, feeling like she had two fully functioning sons instead of one that just got by. Of course, she didn't say it aloud like that, but Solomon was smart enough to see it on her face. And he saw it on his dad's, too. They hadn't made it to dessert before Clark had convinced him to take a look at the van. By midnight, Jason was covered in oil and grease from his elbows to his fingertips. He'd been picking around the motor and listing things they needed to get it running right. Solomon jotted down everything his dad said, contributing the only way he knew how. But mostly, he watched Clark as he nodded his head to these very technical things Jason was describing and pretended not to be clueless.
"You may need a new carburetor," his dad said. "Right, right," Clark agreed. "Totally."
And maybe it was because Lisa had been gone for so long, or because fumes were leaking from the van's potentially toxic motor, but that was the night Solomon realized how he really felt about Clark Robbins. He'd ignored it for weeks. That feeling he got in his stomach when Clark was around, that rushing in his chest that he'd mistaken for panic so many times, but had actually been something else. Something he hadn't felt before. Clark didn't care where he was or where he was going. And even though Solomon was afraid to call it love, what else could it be? It was there. It was real. And if he didn't watch out, it would eventually find a way to ruin everything.
Chapter 18. Lisa Prater. Summer camp had been so much fun when Lisa was younger. She'd get to meet interesting girls from faraway places like Phoenix or Salt Lake City, and their cabins would come up with secret little languages and songs about the wilderness. But as she grew older and reached that pivotal age where being a counselor was her only choice, Lisa found herself constantly nostalgic for the way it once was. Now, as a junior counselor, she was in charge of her own cabin, complete with 10 girls and one senior counselor. That senior counselor was Janice. And she had a hard time forgetting that this camp, one of the three she counseled at every summer, wasn't a Christian one like the other two.
"Let us pray," she said on the third night just before lights out. "Keep it secular," Lisa whispered from the bunk beneath her. "I mean, sweet dreams, campers."
The first week of camp went by pretty quietly, with only one canoe mishap and no reports of stomach bugs from the other bunks. And even though she wondered how Clark and Solomon were doing without her, Lisa was having fun being around some other girls for a change. She hadn't heard the word Star Trek in 7 days, and it felt amazing. The only thing that was a little off was Janice. Lisa knew it wouldn't be easy, but she'd thought setting aside her very important time with Solomon to come to camp last minute would put the things back to normal between them. She was wrong. Janice was still pouting about it, constantly making little jokes about Lisa disappearing or being flaky. She kept her mouth shut, not wanting to argue in front of the young campers, but now Lisa was starting to get pissed. Still, though, she knew the last week of camp would be much easier if she tried to keep the peace, at least for as long as Janice would let her.
"Listen," Lisa said, sitting down across from Janice in the mess hall. "We've got to talk to Chloe. If she doesn't learn to steer a canoe, she'll have to take the class all over again next summer."
"Lisa, just do it for her. We're not training her for the Olympics."
"I can't do that, and you know it. Where's your Camp Elizabeth pride?"
"Sorry, but the girl's hopeless. She sunk 3 canoes and a kayak last summer."
"Oh, I remember that."
"So, are you having a good time?" "Glad you came," Janice asked blandly.
"Maybe," Lisa said.
"It was the least you could do, really."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"You know exactly what it means," Janice said. "Plus, I'm trying to save you from that crazy kid. I'm sure you needed a break."
"He's not crazy," she said, "and I do not need you to save me from anything."
"You know, maybe I'm too normal to be your friend. Not enough problems for you to fix, Lisa."
"You've got plenty of problems, believe me."
Janice was completely caught off guard that Lisa had finally stood up for herself. She leaned closer, putting her palms on the table, and with that mean look in her eyes, the one she used to get before she found Jesus, Janice smiled a little before she began to speak.
"Don't take out all your anger on me.
I can't help it if your boyfriend's in love with that crazy kid. I tried to warn you. You're ridiculous. You act so smart, Lisa. You're always talking about how you want to help people and become this amazing psychiatrist someday, but you can't even see what's going on right in front of you. Where do you think Clark is right now? He's with his friend, our friend. Don't make stuff up just because you're jealous. All right, I'm out, Janice said loudly, throwing her hands up. You're out? That's right. Have fun wrangling Cabin 12 all by yourself. Janice stormed off, and Lisa was left standing outside the mess hall with a group of young campers staring right at her. She flashed them a forced smile and walked back inside to get some lunch. She kept that same smile on her face all day, taking on the role of two counselors until the camp leaders could shuffle someone around to help her. Janice had stormed right to the head counselor's office and demanded she be moved to another cabin. Lisa was sure Janice had told some lie about her to make it easier, but what good would it do to go tell them the truth? At least now she wouldn't have to be reminded of how bad a friend she was every 15 minutes for the rest of camp. Later that evening, as the campers were eating dinner and watching the camp improv group, two other counselors, Tara and Lydia, sat down beside Lisa with a hungry look in their eyes, like they always got when gossip was floating around camp. "I heard she called you a bitch. Is that what happened?" Tara whispered. "No, I told you. She called her boyfriend gay," Lydia added. "She did? Why would she do that?" Tara asked. "Will you two shut up?" Lisa said, her whisper a little louder than theirs. "It's not a big deal. She's just jealous." "I heard your boyfriend's been spending all his time with a gay guy," Lydia said. "Is that true?" "They're like best friends," Lisa defended. "He's my friend, too. There's nothing wrong with it." "Do they hang out without you?" Tara asked. "Of course." Then Tara and Lydia quickly shot each other a look and turned back to her with sad eyes. "Are you okay?" Lydia asked. "Damn it, will you two listen to me? My friend Saul is gay. My boyfriend Clark isn't. I know because he's my boyfriend. So drop it and please stop listening to Janice." "Just let me ask you this," Tara said. "Do you have sex?" "That would be none of your business." "Just answer the question," Lydia ordered. "We've come close a few times." "Oh, no," Tara gasped, shaking her head. "You poor thing," Lydia added. Lisa gave them a blank stare and then fixed her eyes on the performance stage, pretending they weren't beside her. Janice had gotten to them first, probably to everyone first, so now Lisa was the girl at Camp Elizabeth with the gay boyfriend, no matter how much she denied it. Gossip works that way. It makes fools out of everyone but the source. Lisa was relieved, though, that Janice hadn't told them about the essay. Maybe that meant she hadn't completely lost her oldest friend for good. That night, she lay awake for a while after lights out, following a firefly that had found its way into the cabin as it floated and hovered above her. She wondered if Clark was at Solomon's. She couldn't help picturing them together. Janice and the other counselors had somehow etched it into her brain like a drunken tattoo, something that should have never been there, but was impossible to erase. And no matter how many times she convinced herself that it couldn't be true, she still kept coming back around to the possibility that it could.
Chapter 19. Solomon Reed. The day before they finally put water in the pool, Solomon called Lisa, hyperventilating. Since she'd gotten home from camp the night before, he was hoping she'd come over and convince him that going into the backyard wouldn't make the world end. And as he listened to her calm voice reassuring him, he felt a pang of guilt for kind of liking it. Maybe this was just his version of getting better, of accepting that sometimes he needed help. He'd missed her, especially the way she took charge of things. If he couldn't be in control, he knew she could. And without her, things were starting to get weird. "You hear about the van?" Solomon asked a while after he'd calmed down. "That thing is part of my home now."
Your dad can't fix it? I know my dad, he said. And the look on his face when he's out there taking that motor apart tells me he doesn't have a clue what he's doing. That's hilarious, Lisa said. It is, isn't it? It doesn't matter that much to Clark, she said. I think he just wanted another reason to hang out with you. You think so? Because I'm in such high demand socially, right? What did you do while I was gone, besides taking a van apart? Same old, he said. TV, games, watched a movie or two. Clark said you started Lost again. Yeah, we're on season 2. I think it's better the second time. I wish you guys had waited for me. Oh, I'm sorry. It's okay, I can jump in. I've got a good memory anyway. Sweet. So tell me I can do this again. You can do it, Saul. You've been waiting months for this pool, and all you have to do now is remember how that water will feel as you're gliding through it. Gliding? I'm trying to be inspirational, she said. Sorry. Remember that it's no different from being inside. Nothing can happen out there that can't happen in your house. I could drown. It has been a while since you've gone swimming, I guess. A long while. Do you want us there? We should be there, right? I don't know, he said. Part of me thinks it would help, but another part of me doesn't want a bigger audience to disappoint. It's not like that, she said. It is, though. It is. And you guys would have the right to be disappointed. I want to just say yes, I can go outside and get in that pool, but I can't yet. I won't know until tomorrow. I think you'll be fine, she said. I really do. Okay, well, here's an idea. I want you guys there, but you have to promise to swim. Even if I can't, maybe that'll distract my parents from the heartache. Promise, she said. I'll talk to Clark. Awesome. No matter what, you'll finally get to see those abs in person. They're majestic. Can I tell you a secret? I've been doing crunches for weeks, so I won't be too embarrassed. That's hilarious. How's that working for you? I don't have the muscle, he said. He really is from Krypton, isn't he? Superman would never drive that van, she said. Hey, does he ever talk about me? Are you kidding? When is he not talking about you? Be serious, she said. I want to know if he talks about me. Good or bad. Just tell me. Lisa, he talks about you all the time. Always good. What's wrong? Nothing. Just missing the gang, I guess. You down for some company? You know the answer to that, he said. We also have a Munchkin tournament to finish. Yes, we do. Clark's at work, so we'll be over around 5, okay? That afternoon, as soon as they pulled into the driveway and got out of Lisa's car, Solomon swung open the front door wearing a plastic Viking helmet and holding up a toy sword.
Tonight we dine in hell!
He yelled as they walked up. We must have the wrong house, Lisa said.
Prepare to be slaughtered!
Clark yelled, running past her and into the doorway, where he grabbed the sword and pointed it toward her.
Good luck, she said. I brought my A-game today, boys.
It's going to be rough.
She's gotta go down, Clark said as she strutted by him.
Halfway into the first game, neither of them had a snowball's chance in hell of beating her. 3 games later, she was still undefeated. When the tournament was finally over, Solomon threw his cards down in fake anger, and Clark fell to the floor like she'd stabbed him in the heart.
Who wants a rematch?
Lisa said maniacally. I need a break, Solomon said. I thought I really missed you until this bloodbath.
What are they teaching?